So friends, at most Catholic baptisms for children, the gospel today is symbolically reenacted in the baptism rite. And so the priest will do a special blessing and prayer over the lips and the ears of the child and say something like this. I'm doing it from memory. The Lord Jesus made the deaf hear and the mute to speak. May he touch your ears to receive his word and your lips to proclaim his truth to the praise and glory of God the Father. And so if you were baptized since about 1970, that's the formula as a child that would have been used. I didn't realize this a few years ago, and I might have told this story 3 years ago when this gospel came up. It's one of the nice things about never writing down what I say is I don't feel guilty if I use the same thing 3 years later. But I might have told the story that a couple at my last parish asked me to do a baptism in the extraordinary form, so in the Latin form that was used kind of up till 1970 and still can be used. And so I had to dust off my Latin a little bit, and then I was reading the rubrics, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is really earthy. So the priest actually takes saliva from his tongue, and he puts it on the tongue of the baby. And so I'm guessing we're a little more hygienic today, so that doesn't fly with a lot of people. But I remember, so they literally reenact, right, in the old rite. So if you were baptized prior to about 1970, and I'm not going to look at anybody of who that might be here, but that's probably how it would have been done, really literally reenacting the gospel, where Jesus takes his spittle and uses it on the man in the gospel. Obviously, as you could even tell from the baptism prayer, most of us struggle more with spiritual sins of speech and hearing than physical ailments. Obviously, physical ailments of speech and hearing are real, and people have to deal with those. But obviously, the baptism rite speaks more in terms of, do we use our mouth and our ears to glorify God and build up our neighbor, or do we use them to offend God and to tear down our neighbor? And so I wanted to just speak on two particular sins of speech that it's really interesting. The Catechism of the Catholic Church has a section on particular sins that damage the reputation of others. And it lists three. The first is rash judgment, too hastily observing and noticing and dwelling on the faults of others. But then it talks about two sins of speech, detraction and calumny. Now, we tend to lump all these under kind of gossip, but it's kind of worth zeroing in on what these two are, because I think we struggle a lot with them, most people. So detraction is without legitimate, valid reasons, disclosing and revealing the faults and shortcomings of someone else to another. So without legitimate reasons. So there are legitimate reasons to do that, right? There's a place for venting to a trusted friend to try and navigate a situation. There's a place for an intervention. For example, a family has to intervene to help a family member, right? There are legitimate reasons to make known someone else's faults. But a lot of the time, we don't have legitimate reason, right? It's just a concealed form of pride. It's us wanting to damage someone else by making more public. And it's not even that the other person doesn't already know the fault. We love talking over and over and over again about a person's faults, even though we're quite aware of them, right? It's just bringing up, it's a form of detraction, right? Disclosing and talking about the faults and shortcomings of another to someone else without a legitimate reason to do so. I was thinking after yesterday's football day, there's a lot of Michigan and Notre Dame fans that are, you know, likely to fall into detraction today, complaining about Now, Rocket fans and Ohio State fans, we're okay for now, until something terrible goes wrong, and then we'll be very inclined to detraction as well. The second is calumny. This is worse, because calumny is disclosing false information, or at least questionable information about someone else, right? So a rumor circulating about someone else, and you kind of want it to be true, because you don't like the person, but you aren't sure if it's true. And to circulate that information, or to simply circulate false information about another person, to disclose that for the sake of damaging their reputation. And again, usually this is all a concealed form of pride for us. In tearing another down, we prop ourselves up, and we put ourselves in a superior position in relation to that other person. And so, I think with social media, with politics, with everything else, we are so prone to these two sins of speech, detraction and calumny. I wanted to give you some practical advice on overcoming these. I would say gossip in these forms is one of the most confessed sins in the confessional. And I always like to give really practical advice on this, because it's so easy to just be like, you know what, I want to stop gossiping. But we know how hard that is in practice. And so I've just sort of come up with like a staged approach to overcoming detraction and calumny, right? And if we can kind of work through the stages, we actually can grow in the virtue that avoids these things, okay? So, and if you've been to confession and said gossip to me, you've probably heard this approach, but I wanted to share it with you. So the first thing we can do is never initiate it. We are in complete control of that. Complete control. If we never initiate a conversation in which, without legitimate reason, we're disclosing the faults and sins and shortcomings of another, that is completely within our ability to not do. Okay, we're not feeling peer pressured. So the first step is to just stop initiating it. Never initiate a conversation without good cause to highlight someone else's faults. After you've mastered that, right? And that's hard enough, I think. Second, don't contribute to a conversation you find yourself in which these are going on. So you just stand there. You don't contribute new material. You don't pile on. Okay? And that takes courage. It takes courage in a conversation which gossip has started to just not contribute. And maybe you don't have the courage yet to leave the conversation or to speak up, but maybe you have the courage to just stand there awkwardly. Right? That's a second step. That's growth. Okay, the first step's not initiating. The second step's not contributing to gossip that's going on in a conversation. The third step is, and I like this step, is finding a subtle artistic way of either changing the conversation or getting out of the conversation. Okay, this is an art form, right? To divert the conversation away from the topic at hand, or to find a good excuse that's true of why you need to leave the conversation, right? Okay, and I think that's growth. That's a step in the right direction, right? And then the fourth, and obviously the most heroic, is to actually speak up and to say, you know what, guys? We shouldn't be talking like this. We don't want other people highlighting our faults and failures in a group setting. Jesus says, love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? Do unto others as you would have them do to you. We don't like when other people gossip about us. We shouldn't be doing this. Let's talk about something else. That obviously takes the highest form of courage, or not the highest form of courage, but in this setting, it takes courage to do that because you fear rejection and possibly people not liking you and all these sorts of things. But I generally don't think people can go cold turkey with this. Like they can just say, I don't want to gossip, and then go to stage four there. I think they usually have to go through this process, right, of not initiating, of not contributing, of finding ways out of conversation, and then ultimately getting to the point that they can say, you know what, let's not do this, right? Let's not damage this person's reputation, right? We don't like it when people do it to us. So friends, I want to use this gospel, this miracle today as an examination for our own speech. Are the words coming out of our mouth glorifying God and building up our neighbor, or are they tearing our neighbor down and offending God's image in the other person? And so let's recover. All of us maybe don't remember our baptism, but that prayer was said over us as a little child at our baptism, and let's strive to live that prayer out. The Lord Jesus made the deaf hear and the mute speak. May he touch our ears to receive his word and touch our mouth to proclaim his praise and truth to the glory of God the Father.